States, the United States, and its Honorable Court. Be seated, please.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning.
My name is Leslie Diaz. I'm here on behalf of Evelyn Primus. May it please the Court. In this case, defendants District of Columbia and Chief of Police Kathy Lanier decided that my client, Evelyn Primus, an African-American woman who had performed well as a commander for 7 years, which included 4 years of good performance as the Director of Court Liaison, could only stay in the position at the rank of captain, a two-grade and rank downgrade. Yet, after Commander Primus said she could not afford to take such a steep demotion, defendants decided that the best person for the job, a person that they decided was better than Commander Primus, was a white male captain who had no experience whatsoever in the court liaison division and no experience as a commander or a high-ranking official, but who defendants decided should serve nonetheless at the rank of inspector, or rank one grade higher than that of captain. The appearance of discrimination is clear in this case, and it diminishes none after consideration of defendants' non-discriminatory rationale. Indeed, defendants' non-discriminatory rationale is riddled with lies, illogical arguments, and impermissible inferences. The reorganization does not provide a legitimate reason for defendants' discrimination of Commander Primus.
And why is that?
Well, I'll start with the lies, which shows it to be false.
Counsel, there are certain decorums that are observed in practicing law in courtrooms and in briefs. To describe a position by your opposing party, in fact, as a big lie once was jarring to read it in your brief. By about the 18th time, I began to wonder why somebody of your obvious skill at brief writing didn't have a better vocabulary. I don't know about my colleagues, but I don't want to hear you refer to the lies of the other party. I have, I think, once ever in the time I've been on this court before this heard that, and it's something I don't want to hear again.
Okay, Your Honor, I will refrain from that.
I hope so.
If I may turn then to what we have called the sham offer of the inspector position. In that case, that instance, it's clear that that part of defendant's legitimate rationale is not true, and that is evidenced by the testimony of Defendant Lanier and Assistant Chief Alfred Durham.
But it was offered, right?
There was an offer,
right?
But the position was not vacant.
And but it became vacant, and they, so far as the record establishes, they could have made it vacant sooner than they did.
However, Chief Lanier herself testified that she would not have offered the position had it not actually been vacant. Those are her words, not ours. And indeed, Assistant Chief Durham stated under oath that there was no position vacant at the time.
But the offer was given.
There was an offer. We consider it a sham offer.
But how could it be a sham if they made the offer and the position, I mean, presumably the position would have opened if she had accepted it?
You're making a presumption that's contrary to the evidence.
How could you possibly make a sham offer? I mean, if the chief said, all right, we're offering, the assistant chief said, all right, we're offering you this inspector's position, she said, okay, I'll take it, then either they give it to her or they've lost their case. You have some very good points in this case. I'm not demeaning the fact that you do, but I'm not sure that this is one of them.
Your Honor,
I'm not sure what sham offer means. Well, they offered her inspector's position, or they didn't.
I don't mean to interrupt, Your Honor, but I'm taking their words. Okay, if they say that they are not, and this is, again, her testimony under oath.
Why wasn't her testimony under oath susceptible of the position? Now, this doesn't cost you your case, because all you have to have is get past summary judgment. But why wasn't it susceptible of the proposition that I wouldn't have offered her that if there wouldn't have been a vacancy to put her in? She's saying what we're asking you about today. I could make available a position for her, or we wouldn't have made the offer.
That's
not only a reasonable interpretation, maybe the most reasonable. You don't have to lose anything, but...
Assistant Chief Durham also said that... I just lost my thought.
He didn't say what you said he said. The brief says he admitted he had told a lie. What he said was, I misspoke. We do look at the backup documents.
I expect that, Your Honor. I anticipate that.
But let me try to get it this way. Let me just follow up on Judge Sintel's question. Why don't you assume for just a minute that we are persuaded by your argument that the reorganization is a sham or that the offer was a sham, okay? What you have then, as I understand your brief, is the fact that 3 days after your client retired, they offered the position to a white man at one level higher, right?
Yeah.
Your argument is, as I understand it, that's suspicious, right?
Mm-hmm. And yes, although the timing is slightly different. She had not.
Well, why don't you focus on that issue?
Okay, certainly,
okay.
Your Honor.
Yeah.
In terms of that selection, okay, I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question directly.
Am I right that's one of your allegations? Even if we don't agree about the reorganization or the offer, you still have that, correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
And in fact, that sort of goes to the selection process.
Uh-huh.
The fact that...
Suppose we also don't accept your argument that there's something subjective about the selection process. Just focus in on this one point and explain to us how it alone is sufficient to create a jury question.
Well, Your Honor, it certainly establishes a prima facie case,
yeah.
The elements of that, and it gives rise to doubt. I think the doubt comes in the fact that in a 3-day time period, the chief of police changed her mind and said that, well, we don't think this position really should be a captain. It should be an inspector. Whereas all the facts that say that it should be, at the very least, an inspector position were well known to Chief Lanier well before even she decided to demote Commander Primus to the captain position and downgrade the court liaison director position.
But on that, I think it may be a different case, or at least it affects the analysis for me, that then there's the offer to her, and I know that gets into the sham offer question again, to be an inspector at the 6th District substation. And so then it becomes, to me, suppose you are moved from inspector at CL as head of CLD to inspector at the 6th District substation. Would that be suspicious?
No, if Commander Primus had been an inspector,
right.
I think, which is what you're
yes.
assuming, and she was moved to another position, that's fine, that's acceptable. We're not, that's not the complaint.
But isn't that, in essence, what ended up here? I guess this backs into your sham offer thing again. So.
But that ignores what happened before it, which
right.
was the fact that during a reorganization, she was a commander. She'd been a commander for seven years.
Okay.
And.
I'm isolating different aspects of this. Suppose she had been bumped from commander head of CLD to inspector head of CLD. Problem?
Well, we wouldn't have the same case.
Right.
Okay.
Say again, I'm sorry.
I would say we wouldn't have the same case. And that's a hypothetical. That's sort of difficult for me to completely
assume
because it's
one way to look at this, I know there are different pieces, but one of the way I've been thinking about it is, in essence, she's bumped down to inspector and then bumped out of CLD to 6th District substation. And I'm not sure bumping down to inspector is problematic, and I'm not sure, and you, I think, acknowledge that bumping over to 6th District substation is
problematic. Right. I mean, certainly going to an inspector would be more in line with, say, what happened, for example, to the assistant chief's position, which I understand is not exactly similarly situated,
mm-hmm.
but just, you know, it's right. marginally relevant at the very least, okay? So I think that would be a very different case, but that is not the case here, okay?
But I'd really like to hear an answer Judge Kavanaugh's very specific question, which is, if we, let's assume you're right, that the her change in position, that is Lanier's change in position, of offering the position to a to Westover at the inspector level, let's assume that that's sufficient to create a jury question. It creates enough suspicion about her motives, okay?
Mm-hmm.
His question is, why is that significant given that they offered her a position as inspector? So in other words, even if it's suspicious that she offered the position to Westover at a higher level, she offered an inspector position to plaintiff. And if we don't think that was sham offer, what's the injury? Where's the discrimination? She was moved from one inspector position to another.
But she wasn't just directly moved, of course.
She would have been if she accepted the position.
That's ignoring the fact that she was told that she was going to have to stay in the position as a captain.
She offered. I'm asking you whether if you're right about the jury question, what difference does it make since they offered her a position as an inspector, and had she accepted it, she would have been an inspector, and you yourself said that that wouldn't have been discriminatory. They moved her from a captain position. She would have been a captain if she'd stayed, but they put her in. They offered her an inspector job.
If you're looking at whether she had been, do need to save some time for rebuttal. Looking at a captain position, okay, and then they moved her to an inspector, that doesn't make sense because she had been a commander. So essentially, you're going down to a captain, then up to an inspector.
No, but your argument, and don't worry, you get rebuttal time. Your argument is that the jury question is created by the fact that they offered Westover the position as a captain. I mean, as an inspector.
Correct.
But they also offered her an inspector position.
But she
and what Judge Kavanaugh is, I think the question is. You see my point, right? What's the harm? Where is she suffering?
My answer is that she was not in the same position as Westover. She started as a commander. He started as a captain. So if you are then saying that the court liaison director position should be an inspector, okay, you're still treating her differently. You're still promoting him and demoting her when there were vacant commander positions that she could have been moved into, and when we have not been given any reason why she could not have qualified, and we asked for why she couldn't have been moved into any one of the number of vacant commander positions. And when nobody else was downgraded except for when their positions were eliminated. The only other individuals downgraded were the assistant chiefs whose positions were absolutely 100% eliminated. The structure has changed, and I'm sorry that I'm way over on my
time.
That's
okay. Do you have any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. We'll give you a little rebuttal time, okay?
Thank you.
Great.
Good morning, Your Honor. Stacey Anderson on behalf of the district and Chief Lanier. I think the focus this morning has been on the decision to place Westover in the court liaison director's position at the rank of inspector, and I'd like to address that first.
First, before we do that, now it is conceded that the district court erred in the sealing order, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So we have to, in any event, it has to go back for that.
Certainly, Your Honor. Okay, yes, it is conceded. Remand would be appropriate. First of all, I want to place the decisions in the context. This was a global reorganization. There were multiple personnel changes, more than 36 persons were either transferred, promoted, or demoted in the process. It wasn't an isolated incident. Second of all, the chief made an initial determination to reduce the court liaison director's position two ranks to the rank from commander to captain based on her assessment of the size of the division and its responsibilities. When Commander Primus declined to accept that position, She then sought out a replacement candidate, and in the last-minute decision, in a process that was evolving and fluid, and in the context of a meeting with other staff members, made the determination.
But isn't that last-minute decision at least sufficiently suspicious to create a jury question here? I mean, we have to look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, right? We have to give her all reasonable inferences. And, you know, 3 days after she retires, they give the position to a white man at the inspector level. And the reason the chief gave for that was that she thought the higher position was needed because it would make her more effective in dealing with judges and other people. And that's something that that one could conclude she should have known before that date. So,
I understand that, but again, I think you have to look at the totality of the evidence. I do think it's significant that Commander Primus was offered an inspector position when she voiced her concerns.
Right.
Chief Lanier.
That's one step further down the timeline. At that point in time, you've got a person who's in a protected category, who's suffered an employment action, she's been told she's been demoted 2 grades, and then the same position at a grade higher is given to a person who is not within either protected category. That certainly would be, if we're still at prima facie case, you could hardly deny that that'd be a prima facie case.
Exactly, Your Honor.
But on the whole record, why couldn't a reasonable jury, find exactly what the plaintiff claims here, that she was in the protected categories and somebody outside of protected categories got better treatment in an employment action?
Your Honor, again, I think you're correct that it meets the prima facie case, but in responding to the district's non-discriminatory explanation, it's incumbent upon the plaintiff to come forward with some evidence that race or gender was the basis beyond the prima facie case. We have come forward with a non-discriminatory.
The flimsiness of the explanation, is that not sufficient to get her to a jury on that?
I mean, again, Your Honor, I disagree. It was a fluid, evolving process. The decision was made in consultation with others.
You're entitled to disagree, and there might be some of the jurors that would disagree. But why couldn't at least one reasonable juror think that that was exactly what the situation is?
Because, the totality of the context, Your Honor, there was the offer for the inspector's position.
That was after they already knew that she was a disgruntled employee with what might turn into a pretty good case, right?
Well, Your Honor,
the horse been stolen before they started to lock the barn there?
Well, Your Honor, when Ms. Primus walked out of those meetings with Chief Lanier, she testified she had no reason to believe that Chief Lanier's decision was based on anything discriminatory. It was only after she learned.
Only after she found out that a white male had been given the same position at a higher grade.
Correct, Your Honor.
Only after the evidence unfolded that she started to believe the evidence.
In response to her complaint, though, Your Honor, Chief Lanier did offer her at the inspector's.
Can I ask about that?
Sure.
Because I want to, again, with you, isolate what I see as different components of this. So suppose that hadn't happened. Suppose there had been no offer to the inspector at the 6th District substation.
I think it would certainly have been a closer case, Your Honor. Absolutely. I have to agree with that. I think that is a significant factor in this case. If you look at Chief Lanier's testimony and the letter even, she was taken aback by the allegation. Ms. Primus said Chief Lanier said there was no discussion of terminating her from her position. She was offered to stay in the court liaison division. She came back with the notice that she wanted to retire. That was the end of the discussion.
Couldn't you infer from this evidence that, and I'm not saying this is what happened, but I'm just saying what one view of it could be, that didn't want an African-American woman as the court liaison, so bumped her down multiple positions to try to squeeze her out. Then, once she complained, to put her in another position, but not the court liaison position.
Your Honor, there's just no reason to believe that her race or her gender was the motivating factor.
That's
when
a
you
jury
look at
question.
The totality of the reorganization. There were persons of similar races and genders that were promoted. There were persons of different races and genders that were demoted.
You're going beyond the question now that we're asking you. You really should focus on the issue that all three of us have asked you about, namely the jury question that seems to flow from this 3-day change of mind going from captain to inspector. Assume for purposes of these questions we agree with you about everything else, that the reorganization's legitimate, that this is not a sham offer, that there's no subjective hiring. Assume we agree with you about all that, okay? The only question the three of us are focusing on is this question of whether a jury issue arises from the chief's decision to go from captain to inspector for a white man.
And again,
that's the question.
Your Honor, my response to that is, well, that may establish the prima facie case.
No. We're way beyond the prima facie case here. The question is, has she come up? Is there something that in the record that suggests that the proffered legitimate non-discriminatory reason, namely the reorganization, might be pretext for discrimination? And the pretext that the record suggests is the question arising from the chief's she calls it last minute. Last minute, that's what her Durham calls it in the record.
Correct.
Last minute change of mind, going from inspector from captain to inspector. And why isn't that sufficient to? We're not saying that it proves discrimination.
No,
we're just asking whether or not. And you yourself agreed that, but for the offer of the inspector position, this would be a lot closer case because of that. Right?
Yeah, it would be a closer case certainly.
Yeah.
That's a very favorable piece of evidence for us.
No, but what
Your
about
Honor, she question? Came forward with a non-discriminatory, reasonable explanation for her decision. For the jury to rule in Ms. Primus's favor, they would simply have to just disbelieve her. And at the summary judgment
That's
stage...
That's normally the case. The jury has to disbelieve somebody in order to decide a case, counsel.
Right, but at the summary judgment
That's right,
stage...
That's right, cases for living a long time, and nearly always the jury had to disbelieve somebody.
Right, but at the summary judgment stage, a defendant
the inherent
responding
incredibility
to
is not sufficient to stand the motion summary judgment. But here it's just a bit more than inherent incredibility, isn't it? I mean, there are suspicious circumstances here. The last-minute nature of the change in rank involved in the giving the higher rank to the white man.
Your Honor, she offered a reasonable, non-discriminatory reason for that change. She was engaging in a reorganization. During the last meeting, they reconsidered what the appropriate rank would be for that particular position and determined.
And she didn't think about contacting the person who had had the position and telling her you can have it at.
And she explained why she didn't, Your Honor. She offered three explanations.
And she offered three of them, and a jury could have believed one or none of them. But
yep.
A jury. Why shouldn't a jury have that opportunity?
Your Honor, disbelief alone is an insufficient basis. You have to give the jury a reason to disbelieve. And in this case, I don't think there's a sufficient reason for the jury to disbelieve her testimony. Again, she explained why she didn't offer the position to Commander Primus. And frankly, Commander Primus didn't testify that she would accept that position had she been offered it. In fact, the sole reason she rejected the inspector's position in the substation was because she did not want any reduction of rank. It wasn't that she was being moved out of the court liaison division, it was that her rank was being reduced.
Well, on that question, that gets to the question I was focused on, which is, isn't there some harm that the plaintiff could feel from being moved, say, hypothetically, inspector at CLD to inspector at 6th District Substation or not?
Hypothetically, yes, but that wasn't the basis of her decision to reject that. She never said, I want the position in court liaison division at the rank of inspector. So that she is not claiming harm from being moved.
Well, on the other hand, she was never offered the position at the rank of inspector.
Correct. And again, Chief Lanier offered three reasons for not making that offer. And
right.
There's no testimony.
Back up to what you just said. You said she never said, I would take it at that. She never had the occasion to say that.
But
that didn't come up. She was, had your side given her that opportunity, perhaps she would have said, yes, I'd do it.
Well,
but
Your Honor,
it's not her fault that she never had the occasion.
Right, but in hindsight and in the course of the litigation, she had never claimed that that was a harm to her, that she wanted that position at inspector, and thus the failure to offer it was some basis for finding liability here. Going back to the point I was making, Your Honor, it's not simply enough that the jury could disbelieve Chief Lanier. There's got to be a basis in the record for disbelieving her and believing that the basis for her decision was race or gender. Chief Lanier testified that the global reorganization was an evolving, fluid process and that she made a last-minute decision to make this change. The mere fact that it was last-minute alone is insufficient to establish that it was based on race or gender. A reasonable jury could not make that inference. From those facts.
Okay.
If there's no
Thank
further
you.
Questions, we'd ask that the court affirm.
Thank you. How much time did counsel have left? None? Had what?
1 minute.
Okay. You can take 2 minutes.
Your Honor, first, to respond to what you were discussing with the opposing counsel, there is a statement, and I'm frantically looking for it, and I can't find it, in the record where Commander Primus testifies in her deposition that she didn't want to go back out to a district. So, in fact, she did. There is testimony in the record that she did make a distinction between the court liaison director position and the 6th District substation position. She says something about going back out on patrol because that's what that does. I'm sorry, I just can't find it in the record this quickly. I'd like to make two quick points in rebuttal to defendants saying that their legitimate rationale is strong enough. One is the last minute change by Lanier is not reasonable. And it's not reasonable because it assumes that Lanier was not paying attention to the position and what she was doing prior to that. The size of the court liaison division had
just on that. Wasn't she doing a lot of positions at the same time? There was a lot going on. This wasn't the only thing on the plate at the time.
Sure, that's true, but that doesn't mean that you're supposed to disregard one position just because you have a full reorganization. That's why you have a team, so that everything gets paid attention to.
We consider things all the time, at least.
Especially
in personnel situations, titles. I don't know, in the real world, I just think that you're aware. You change things all the time. I'm not sure what suspicions we can draw from.
Almost never. I've never seen a change like this being made after a reorganization is announced or someone's being told that something's being done. That's very unusual. Yes, you make changes.
Title change?
This is not just a title change. Actually, I don't think I said
well,
that.
Well, it's head of CLD. Yeah, there's some pay and benefits change.
Right. So this is not just changing title. That's.
I know. I understand that. It's okay. A change in rank. I understand.
Right. So, I mean, in 20 years of doing this, I've never seen that. So that you come and do that at the very last second. I think that's very rare. The other thing that I wanted to point out is that she was also treated worse than anybody else, and my time is out, I think.
Finish your sentence. Go ahead.
Thank you. And that is different. No one else was offered a 2-grade downgrade, and I listed these things in our brief. So, okay. Thank you very much,
okay,
Your Honor.
Thank you. Case submitted.